The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Solnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
On today's show, we are going to answer quite a few emails. We're still getting lots of emails, which we love. We've got some emails on some Social Security questions, quite a variety of those types of questions. We've got an email question on Roth IRAs for kids. We also are going to answer something, hopefully, on HSA contributions, which are health savings accounts. And there's a contribution question, which oftentimes comes up when people are approaching retirement. And then we expect to have Peter Scott come in to answer a couple of estate planning questions for us as well. So we have quite a mixture of things today. And if we can get Jim to speak efficiently in his relaying of information, we might actually get through all of these things. So welcome to the show today, everyone. I'll apologize up front if I start coughing like Jim usually does.
You better not give me your cold.
Because I'm at the tail end of a typical Colorado cold.
You better be at the I'm not catchy anymore tail end.
I can leave the room right now if you wish.
And then you have yet to show me how to run that equipment you got, so the show will be kind of boring.
It would be kind of boring, yeah, and kind of quiet.
Yeah, because I don't even know how to use that equipment. Yeah. We do have to learn how to use that equipment, though, because you're not going to be here in June. You're going to be in Vietnam. And
I was just talking to Justin about that, and I said, you know, it's kind of sad that you have to learn how to do something that you'll not have to do for a long time and then have to be retrained on it again. So maybe we could just pre-record a few shows before I leave.
We could, but sooner or later. Darn, I missed. For those who don't know, I was trying to throw a...
Well, how would they know, Jim?
They can't, because they can't see.
Yeah.
But I was trying to throw some trash into the trash bin and missed. Mm-hmm. Where were we?
Sooner or later,
We have to learn how to do it.
Why?
Because someday you may not be here, as in June, or another day you're sick.
As soon as you can afford to hire a radio producer or show producer, then you'll have a person to do it.
And perhaps the third hour will be recorded separately.
Third what?
Well, you don't want to do a second show or third hour.
You're not going to do a third hour. Seriously?
But I can have Justin do it because he can't say no.
I'll teach him to say no.
You're an independent contractor.
I'll encourage him.
You can tell him to go pound time. There's nothing I can do about it.
You might create this might become a unionized office.
Justin's an actual employee, so if I have to, we will. But this idea is running through my little head.
All kinds of ideas run through your head.
There are tons. Mm-hmm.
But I'm what you call a reality check.
But we have a lot of emails to go through. We got 8 new emails from Sunday. Today's only Tuesday.
And we need to do a little catching up, too. So.
And we have to do, so speaking of catch up, Peter is going to try to come in at some point in time, just walk
He'll
in and surprise
wander
us.
Wander in.
He is meeting with a client right now. And because we got 2 estate planning questions in February, and here it is already March. I also want to give out a shout out to Lone Star George down in Texas.
I did say Lone Star Steakhouse, but
no, Lone Star George.
No, I get it, but my mind
automatically
drifts.
He is waiting for
food.
Another question. Maybe I don't want to promise on this show because I could hit Pete up with this. Pete already talked about some of the estate planning stuff with Lone Star George. He'd like us to address some other questions. So if we don't get it on today's show, and I can't guarantee Lone Star that we are going to get it on today's show, let's do it on next week's show. How's that? What the heck did I do with his email just now?
Well, maybe that explains why you haven't answered it yet.
No, it was on my iPad. See, you and this silly iPad. There it is. Now it's back.
He was always there.
No, it disappeared for a while. Maybe we'll get to this. I don't think we'll get to it on this show, but let's answer it for him on next week's show. How's that?
Sure.
Okay, we'll do that. But he was one of the 8 emails that we got in since Sunday. And I do feel bad because he's waiting patiently for his answer. So we'll try addressing his question on next week's show. And we're just going to catch up and try to get through. Oh, look who's here. He just walked in.
Oh, perfect. So we can start with
we
some
can start
estate
with Pete's.
Planning questions.
Yes, we'll start. Hi, Pete.
Or we can just make him sit and listen to you jabber on about things.
Well, I'm trying to use my iPad more for its electronic uses, and it's not working. So, Pete, that is a new chair for you. We paid $10 off of Craigslist for it, and your mentee, Brandon, knelt on it and broke it. So be careful sitting down. That's what you get for paying $10 for a chair off of Craigslist. And you being an attorney, I don't want you to fall.
Well, you know. If it starts making creaking sounds, reposition yourself. Yes, maybe we need some cushions next to the chair.
Oh, that'd be okay. Just on the floor, you mean.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, the Pete we are referring to is Peter Scott. You can also tell folks how when Chris and I literally say we take no takes on our recording, it doesn't get any more obvious than that. Pete walking in the middle, and now we're talking about a broken chair.
I've heard shows that do that sometimes.
Well, that's our show. Mm-hmm. Pete, how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing well.
Good. Chris?
Doing pretty well.
Good.
Chris
good.
Is getting over a cold,
I'm
but
at the tail
so
end.
Are you.
No, I'm not getting over it. I'm right smack in the middle of it.
Oh, see, oh, he's the one you need to be worried
great.
About.
I've got this from the left and right now. How the hell am I going to get out of this room today without getting a cold?
I don't know. You should wear one of those special masks.
Yeah.
I probably
should. For
your
own protection.
You yes. sound like death warmed over.
Well,
not so much.
Yeah, I've still
he now has a better radio voice.
That's right. I have my big boy voice on.
Oh, goodness. I'm going to be sick next week. Lone Star, I may not answer your question next week because I may be sick.
There's always an excuse, isn't there?
There is an excuse. I'm already prepping. Okay, but Peter, for those who don't know, because he hasn't been on in a while, is Pete Scott, estate planning attorney extraordinaire. And you're also working on retiring.
Yes, I am.
How is that going?
Actually, it's going fairly well. I can see the end in sight.
You're more retired now?
Yes, I'm just tired at the moment, but working towards retired. But I'm looking at the end of the year, maybe, but I'm not taking on any more work. So
that's still a long ways off.
Yeah, I thought it was April 15th you were going to retire.
Yes, it was, and that would be a nice goal if I could get there. But there's too much work between here and there.
So April 15th is out, December 31st is back in?
I think that's more realistic. October 15th would be my intermediate goal.
And Mrs. Peach, she's fine with this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, she's going to work this tax season, both spring and fall, and probably again next year. So I'll have to find things to do during tax season.
When you start holding her back, that's when the pressure will really start.
Yeah. Well, I'll just kind of, you know, when she's going off to work and I'm still in bed, I'll just say, well, you know.
Well, it's great to have you here again. I haven't seen you in a while. We wanted to see how you're doing and answer some of these estate-related questions. But anything you want to bring us up to date on before we jump into these questions?
No, I don't think so. I think things are fairly calm in the tax legislation area. I mean, there's lots of talk, but no
action.
No action, and I just don't think they've got enough on their plate, especially with the introduction of the new replacement bill for Obamacare. They're not going to turn their attention to taxes for a while. So, but the IRS, I read this morning, has backed off of the penalties for not reporting the Obamacare coverage on the tax returns. They originally said that they would reject any returns for 2016 filed, didn't have the box checked as to someone having coverage. They're going to head ahead and accept those by virtue of the executive order from President Trump. So those will go through. It doesn't mean that the law has changed. It's just that they're going to go ahead and accept the filing. So that'll help a lot of people, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So
a lot of uninsured people who don't want to buy insurance.
Right, right.
Okay. Well, anything you want to get to, Pete? I mean, you're not Pete. You're Chris. Anything?
I am, yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. No, I think we should just tackle the emails.
Okay. And why don't both of you turn your mics and chairs the other way?
I see.
And talk away from me. Because you both look at me as you talk.
Like we're going to be talking while you're talking?
Just trying to get germs blown the other way.
Just don't breathe while
I was thinking of that, but I don't know if it's going to work. I need to get a gas mask.
You have that nice kind of wool sweater thing. Just breathe through that. Put that
up over your mouth, yeah.
Maybe I'll just have Tina run to the military surplus store, Jack's up the road, and come back with a gas mask real fast.
Or a couple gallons of emergency.
That's not going to work. I want a gas mask.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I will read the questions. Pete, you provide said answers. How's that?
That works.
Okay, we'll do this in order of receive. This one came in February 21st, so we'll begin with that one
from
first.
From Maine? Is it from Maine?
Goodness. Ooh, this might be a new one.
Where?
It isn't. Darn it.
Oh.
Darn it. Minnesota.
Oh, we've had Duluth on there a long time.
Yeah, but you have it way up there at the top.
Because
so
that's Duluth.
I know that's Duluth.
We haven't heard from our Duluthian for quite some time.
No, we have not.
Hope he's doing okay.
And the second email is from Tennessee, and we have that. So
nailed it,
fresh out of luck. Did you hear the good news? Have you been listening to the Retirement and IRA show as you've been away?
No, because I have been away.
I know. We got, finally, a West Virginian email.
Really? Mm-hmm.
Yes, two weeks ago.
Wow. Yeah, we had one for sure and one that we could have probably counted if we had to. So yeah. We'll call it one and a half.
Filling up that East Coast.
Yeah,
we're aiming for Maine, so if you know any Maynards.
Maniacs.
Maynards.
Mm-hmm. Maniacs.
Maynard G. Krebs.
So he's now chose, Chris has now been pleading from people from three states.
Really?
Maine, Delaware, and Rhode Island.
Okay.
New Hampshire.
New Hampshire.
And Rhode Island. And four, really.
Four? You want New Hampshire, too?
Well, it's right touching Maine.
Correct.
We can knock those out with a twofer.
If somebody's on the line?
Yeah.
Okay, so Maine, New Hampshire, Delaware, Rhode Island. Any emails from those states would greatly please Chris.
And get priority attention.
Okay, so let's get to this email from February 21st. Oh, and Chris,
are we going to get to the email?
All right.
I'm just saying.
I'm
speaking for the audience at this point.
It's like squirrel, and I get off.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, I'll get back on track, and then we'll hit Pete with our new exciting news.
Oh, okay.
He may like the third hour. You don't.
No. I doubt that.
Okay, it begins. Hey, Chris, Jim, and Justin. Obviously,
and
they forgot you, Pete.
Yeah, so I don't have to answer it. But it's nice seeing you guys.
Well, you haven't been on for a while, so I'm sure that's why they overlooked.
Yep, out of hearing, out of mind.
I'll put that in. Hey, Chris, Jim, Justin, and Pete. Love how you guys get into all the nitty-gritty of trusts, financial planning, and taxes. I listen to about 10 different personal finance podcasts, and yours is always one that I look forward to. Anyhow, I have a tax question. My mom passed away. My mom passed both a traditional IRA and Roth IRA to my sister and I via a trust. So his mom must have passed away.
Mm-hmm.
The IRAs first went to the trust with my dad as trustee. Then my dad disclaimed them, so they went to my sister and I in a sub-trust of that trust. I'll explain what he's talking about here as I get through this email. So we have a non-spousal inherited traditional IRA and a non-spousal inherited Roth IRA inside our trusts. One sub-trust for my sister and one sub-trust for myself. Mm-hmm. I'm planning on stretching them out through my lifetime, but I'm having issues figuring out how to do the 1041 and the K-1. I'll have Pete explain what those are. I'm wondering how to report the traditional IRA and Roth IRA distributions on both of those forms. I believe the traditional IRA distribution is reported on line 8 of the 1041, and that will just pass through to my personal return. The traditional IRA distribution is then reported on line 5 of the K-1. I want to confirm those are the correct. Regarding the Roth IRA distributions, a couple of sources have told me just to not report the Roth IRA distributions anywhere on the 1041 or K-1. This seems odd when the custodian sends a 1099-R and it's just not reported anywhere. I can't find any documentation on where to report that information. Thanks for your help, George from Minnesota, not West Virginia. Mm-hmm. So let me get into a few things, Pete, before you answer his questions on where everything goes. So, folks, he began by saying there was a trust and subtrusts and all this other kind of things. I just kind of want to explain what it appears to me that his mom did. His mom created a trust, and that trust had become beneficiary of her IRA.
And Roth IRA.
And Roth IRA. And it appears to me, and Pete, correct me if you think I'm not understanding it correctly, that the father, who is still alive, the husband of the mother, his dad, probably was the original beneficiary of the trust.
That would be my guess.
And disclaimed it. You have 9 months to disclaim an inheritance. You don't have to, folks, accept an inheritance. Now, this is part of estate planning, as I'm sure Pete will attest to. And sometimes a beneficiary is specifically named knowing that he or she, in this case it was the father, will actually disclaim the inheritance. But they want it to go through the father first, just in case perhaps something is going on and the father should end up inheriting this account, but they want to make it a little more flexible, give the father the right to decide, do I need this money or not? Do I want to disclaim or not? If you disclaim, it's as if you never inherited it to begin with, but it cannot go to just someone the father chooses willy-nilly. The father couldn't say, I hereby disclaim and I want to give this to my favorite online radio host financial planner. Mm-hmm. He couldn't say that unless his favorite online radio show financial planner was named as the contingent beneficiary on the IRA.
By the mother in the first place.
By the mother in the first place, mm-hmm. Correct. But what it appears to me, Pete, is contingent beneficiaries were what this reader is calling subtrusts. And the mother had the foresight or had a good good estate planning attorney that they created what are known as subtrusts, a little trust for the son and a little trust for his sister, the daughter. So each get their own trusts and the IRA can be split half, I'm just assuming it's half to the brother who wrote our email and the other half to the daughter. Now, it could be a different breakdown. It could be 70-30, 60-40. I'm just assuming 50-50. Each subtrust gets to inherit it, and therefore, assuming the trust is created correctly, and it sounds to me like it has, each trust can stay open over the IRA can last as the distributions begin over each child's life expectancy. So if one child was 50, but the other child was 30, let's say there's a 20-year difference between the two of them, the 30-year-old is not being forced to use the 50-year-old's life expectancy to determine her required minimum distributions and how long that IRA gets to stay open. So I'm assuming all of this is what the mother had created. Do you agree with this, Pete?
I do. It's as you said, it's very common with estate planning attorneys in conjunction with the financial advisors to set up a menu, as I call it, of beneficiary designations. So what it does, it postpones to the moment of death or certainly afterwards as to where the best opportunity for this IRA to go within the tax structure and the income structure. So presumably, the father said, look, I don't really need this money. So it gave him the opportunity to say, no thanks, which is what a disclaimer is. But Jim, as you pointed out, the father, he can only say no thanks. He can't say no thanks, but I want it to go here. So all he can do is say no thanks. He looked to the next person in line, which were the two sub-trusts for the brother and the sister. So, but if that's not there, then it would go to a default, which is probably her estate, which is not what we want. And then that's going to cause the IRA to have to be paid out over the next 5 years.
Exactly. So whenever you do disclaiming planning, there always has to be a contingent beneficiary in line. One other thing, the primary beneficiary was actually a trust. The father was trustee of the trust. So he acted in his capacity of trustee of the trust to say to the IRA custodian, this trust does not want to be beneficiary of this account. So that's the other thing to point out. Everything was set up for trusts. So I'm just assuming these IRAs were sizable relative to what most typical IRAs are. So I'm going to guess it's a seven-figure or multiple seven-figure an IRA value. So it could be $2, $3, $4, $5 million. And the mother was looking to offer some protections. So she wanted to use a trust. So again, he made it perfectly clear the father was trustee of the first beneficiary, and as trustee, he said this trust doesn't want to be beneficiary. The contingent beneficiaries were two what they call sub-trusts. Now, am I correct, Pete? A sub-trust is simply, they could have actually even been trusts inside the main trust?
Well, they probably were.
Okay.
But they're trusts that would normally be set up at dad's death, because everything passes in from dad to the trust. But in this case, because the dad disclaimed the IRA, there was money actually available to go into those sub-trusts.
So right away.
They got established at mom's death rather than waiting for dad to die.
Okay. And one thing, whenever you work with an estate planning attorney and they're recommending sub-trusts, you must name the sub-trusts as the contingent beneficiary, not the main trust. Let's say the name of the main trust was the main trust. You can't write as contingent beneficiaries the main trust. You have to write the name of the sub-trusts inside there. And let's say they were called sub-trust for daughter and sub-trust for son. Let's just say those were the names of the trust. On the beneficiary form of the IRA, under the contingent, it would have to say the sub-trust for daughter, the sub-trust for son. That's how you name a sub-trust. It has to be by name on the beneficiary form. So I'm just rather trying to explain all this to you listeners, because if we just read this email and Pete answered it, a lot of people would be sitting there saying, what the heck are they talking about? Sub-trusts and trusts and trustees and just, all this kind of stuff.
Don't forget disclaimer.
And disclaimer. So I'm just trying to walk you through, folks. This was a more advanced estate planning strategy that was being done. And now let's get into the nitty-gritty, Pete, of where he puts all this information on the tax return.
All right. So he's asking where it shows up. Well, we've got two assets here, sources of income. We've got the traditional IRA, which is taxable as the distributions, because son and daughter are going to have to pull out their required minimum distributions based on their life expectancy. So let's just use his, because it's his question. So he has to pull out X number of dollars. That's taxable income from the traditional IRA, so that needs to be reported on the federal. Well, first of all, the trust receives it, and then that's where it gets reported on the tax return for the trust. And we'll get, as we come back, then we'll talk about how that flows through to the son's tax return, and that's really the basis of his question.
Perfect. So we'll get to that tax detail right after this break here. Learned a lot more about trust than we were expecting, I guess. Getting through one question before every break.
Did you expect anything
not
less?
Not going to work, Jim. You need to speed it up a little bit. So So when we come back from this first break, we're going to hear one of the top songs from 1935, which was the year that Social Security started. This hit from 35 was the first country song by a female artist to sell more than 1 million copies, which back then was a lot. Now they sell 10, 50, 100 millions, I guess. But back then, the first female country song to top 1 million sales. So we'll find out who that is and what song that is right after this short break.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show.
That was painful.
You like that yodeling?
Oh my God, I felt like a dog listening to a whistle.
You're not a big fan of yodeling?
Not her pitch.
Wow. That was beautiful.
Really?
Yeah. Funny, before I tell you what song this is,
I want to be a cowboy something.
Listen to this remake. And guess who it is? You'll never guess. It starts singing a lot faster than the other one, so she doesn't yodel.
There's no yodeling in this?
No, but listen to who it is.
I want to be a cowboy sweetheart. I want to learn to rope and ride. I want to ride on the plains.
That's an 80s pop artist. Do you know who that is?
80s pop? Madonna.
Nope.
Oh.
Now let me play the song that you'll recognize her. Hang on. Technology is slow sometimes. This totally blew my mind.
That was Cyndi Lauper.
Can you believe that? Cyndi Lauper re-recorded that Patsy Montana song from 1935.
I did not know that.
The things Cyndi Lauper's recorded, that has to be one of the most bizarre choices.
I think she should have yodeled, though.
I looked through the list. Maybe she could. I don't know. Maybe she did later on. But anyway, that was I Want to Be a Cowboy's Sweetheart by Patsy Montana and the Prairie Ramblers.
I'm going to guess Patsy Montana was a stage name.
Really?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Well, you think her name was what? Linda Montana?
I think Montana wasn't in her name.
Anna Montana?
Anna Montana, yeah.
I don't know. But anyways, that was our song, folks, from 1935, the year Social Security was established. Mm-hmm. Next week.
Also covered by Cyndi Lauper.
Covered by Cyndi Lauper. Provided all this bits of trivia provided to you by Chris Stein, a apparent Cyndi Lauper fan.
Not really, but I just thought, I saw the list when I looked for the song. I'm like, oh, well, there's Patsy Montana, and then right below, Cyndi Lauper. What?
But we do this as a lead-in to what's new on Help With My Social Security. We'll explain later how we came up with all these songs, but that was a song from 1935. And Pete, at this last break, you were in the middle of trying to answer a listener's question of how to complete the tax documents on a IRA distribution that he is receiving and how to go about doing this when the primary beneficiary was a trust, and he is beneficiary of said trust. How does he handle all the tax documents?
So let's start with some basics. A trust files an income tax return on a form 1041, one up from what we normally file is a 1040. Mm-hmm. And like we, the trust has to report all of its income. Even though it has zero taxable income potentially, it has to report all that taxable income.
So, and it would have zero if it passes all that income on to the beneficiary of the trust.
Right. Unlike us, we don't get a tax deduction for giving money to our children. A trust gets a tax deduction for giving income to a beneficiary. It's called an income distribution deduction. And so that's really what the question is revolving around. And I'm going to start with the traditional IRA, and then we'll circle back and talk about the Roth. So the traditional, as your listeners know, is tax any distributions from the IRA to the beneficiary are income taxable when they're made, in the year in which they're made. So in this case, there was a distribution, presumably in 2016, from the IRA to the subtrust. And so that would require, that alone requires the filing of an income tax return. And then from reading the question, it appears that all of that money was then distributed to the beneficiary, our George in
Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. And so his question is, how do you report that? And he was on the money. It's on the 1041. There's a line on the tax return that says other income, line 8. And that gets reported. The 1041 is very similar to our 1040. It's got some nuances here and there. But anyway, that sets the gross income. So if we said that's $20,000, just to pick a number out of there. He didn't give us numbers. So it's got $20,000 of income. Now, if you drop down on that return, and what he's looking at is line 18, which talks about your income distribution deduction. So if all that $20,000 was distributed to George before the end of that tax year, so received in 2016, distributed in 2016, then the trust is going to get an offsetting deduction for that $20,000. So with regard to the traditional IRA, he's right. Now, how do we report that to the beneficiary? Well, there's a form called a K-1 that shows, is given to the beneficiary. I call it, it's like a big 1099, basically. Mm-hmm. So what it's going to say on there is you're going to have to show the $20,000 of income, because the IRS then will look at that. They'll have George's Social Security number from the 1041 and copy of the K-1. So they're going to be looking for that $20,000 to show up
on his personal tax return.
Form 1040, on his personal tax return. Mm-hmm. So that's how they're tracking it. And so that's true. Now, we don't know what the trust said, but let's just say this is just a complication to it, and it's not responsive to his question, but I just wanted to clarify it. If the trust subtrust was set up and said George gets the income, but then the principal of the trust goes to his children, for example, then George would really only receive 10% of the IRA distribution, because there's two sets of accounting. There's income tax accounting and there's fiduciary or trust tax accounting. And if there's a distinction between income and principal, then the default, if the trust doesn't say otherwise, is 10% of an IRA is treated as income, the distribution, and 90% is treated as principal. So George, having received, he could have received the full $20,000, but he would only report $10,000, because that's all he's entitled to under accounting principle. So it's not an issue in this case. So George gets to report $20,000. The trust gets a deduction, ends up with zero taxable income from the traditional IRA.
Okay. So as long as it passes through, the one thing you don't want to do, of course, is have that IRA distribution that came out remain in the trust, because then it's exposed to trust tax rates, which is right. A very compressed set of tax brackets, and you'll be paying a lot more tax than if it had gone out to George.
Right. So I'll be paying the maximum income tax in hangover, I think it's 12.7
or something, yeah.
Yeah. So the traditional IRA, I'm sorry, the Roth IRA is what he's questioning, and I think that's where he's getting some conflicting information. He talks about getting a 1099-R from the Roth IRA custodian. On that 1099-R, it'll report the income that was distributed. And in the box where it shows taxable income on the 1099-R, it should say zero. Because as you've discussed, Roth IRA distributions are not taxable. So while it appears that from the 1099-R that he should report it somewhere on the 1041 return, it is not taxable, and this is an income tax return, so he doesn't have to show the income received from the Roth on the 1041 and thus not on the K-1. IRS will be aware of that by the 1099-R that says it's not taxable because there's zero amount in the taxable distribution box.
But if the 1099-R was incorrectly filled out by the custodian and doesn't say zero in that box, and I don't remember the box number, but that, yeah, the box down there that shows the taxable income, not just the total distribution from the Roth, that needs to be corrected. He needs to, yeah, call, he needs to contact the custodian, get a corrected, a revised 1099, because otherwise the IRS will come looking.
Yes.
Because they'll think that there's some amount of taxable income there to be recognized for which he's not reporting it on his income tax return.
Or on the 1041 either.
Or on the 1041, yeah, right. It doesn't appear at all on any of the other normal documents where you'd record taxable income, and they'll wonder why. So you, yeah, can avoid that by getting the, don't just ignore it saying, oh, I don't really owe it on there. The copy you're getting, there's a copy going to the IRS as well. So they're going to see that, and that'll have to be reconciled if it's an error. My guess is it's not. My, yeah, guess is it's correct, but I have seen incorrect 1099s from entities that should know better,
yeah.
I guess.
They make mistakes, too.
Yes.
There's always a possibility of mistake, but yes, the Roth distribution is tax-free, so that's why you don't necessarily have to record it. Everything the IRS needs to know is on the 1099. They see the money coming out. They see the box that should be checked. Again, we don't have a 1099 in front of us, so we don't know what box number it is, but it should show total taxable amount zero.
Now, here's a quick add-on question for me. The Roth distribution, since it's not taxable, could he leave that in the trust without any ramifications other than if then there are earnings that occur in there, he's going to expose those earnings to something,
yes,
to future taxes at the trust rates. That could be of concern. But if he needs it, if he would like it to remain protected in the trust for some reason, mm-hmm, he wouldn't have to, he's not really compelled to take that out, correct?
No, it would really depend on the terms of the trust. If it, right, if the trust said all the income is to be distributed,
then you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
But leaving it in there is no problem because it's tax-free.
Right, but the, correct, taxable distribution that came out, you don't want to leave in there.
No.
Because as soon as it rolls into the next tax year, now on that 1041 for that trust, you're going to be recording that, in your example, $20,000 of income, and it's way past the top tax bracket now for trusts, and you're going to be very sorry you did that from a tax standpoint.
Yeah, the cost of accumulating taxable money, IRA distributions inside a trust, are the very prohibitive tax brackets that trusts will face. If this $20,000 amount is correct, and we just made that number up out of thin air, the first $12,700 is not taxed at zero to the trust. That first $12,700 runs through all brackets. So the 10, the 15, the 25, the 28, the 33, the 30, there's another one in there. Is it 35 or 36 before the 39?
36, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Whatever, 35, 36, and then the 39.6. All of that is being filled very, very quickly. And anything above the 12,000, we think it's 12,700 this year. Do you know that as a fact?
I don't know it as a fact. Right, I just recall it.
Yeah, it's right, yeah, around there. Anything above 12,700 will be taxed to the trust at the highest income tax bracket. That would be 39.6%. If that trust does not pass taxable income out. And then it could be subject, depending on the state issues, to state tax and local income tax as well, if you live in New York or many places in California. So it can really be you can lose a lot of money inside a trust by holding it in the trust and not passing it if it's going to be taxed to the trust as income. That's why most trusts will pass income. And bear in mind, for income tax purposes, folks, all distributions from IRAs are considered income, traditional IRAs, not Roth IRAs. So that's why when a trust is beneficiary of an IRA and that trust is going to accumulate money, you can lose a lot of it. So we have to bear that in mind. But it does sound to me, Pete, that his mom did some fine estate planning, and I think everything is set up fine. Hopefully that answered his question. Let's get to a Tennessean question. This is an iTunian from Tennessee. This one,
I wouldn't say there's a right or wrong answer to this. I think if you got several estate planning attorneys in a room, Pete, or several financial planners in a room, you might get several different answers.
Yeah, and some of it's going to depend in this question on how long mom lives.
Exactly. So I'm going to let Pete answer the question, but I will read it. This came in a few days after the previous email. This came on January 24th. It begins, Jim and Chris. He forgot to say Pete again. I think that was a pure oversight on his behalf. But it says, thanks for an always informative and entertaining show. I just retired at age 60. I'm married, no children, have no debt outside of my mortgage, and have more income from sources than I need to meet my needs. Good problem to have. Mm-hmm. Very good problem to have. In fact, in retirement, I am in the 33% tax bracket. My home mortgage interest is the only significant tax deduction I have. I have been supporting my widowed mother, aged 80, with a monthly deposit as her primary source, of income is her Social Security. So in other words, folks, he's given his mom a little bit of money every month to supplement her Social Security. Between these two revenue sources, her Social Security and the money he's given her, she is comfortably living on her own in her paid-for home. Her investments are small and safely invested, so there isn't any real income from those, which makes sense. If you're invested securely, you're not generating much in income right now because interest rates are so low. So in other words, folks, his mom is 80, living on Social Security, and the largesse of her son, who is giving her money every month. She has a home, and the home is fully paid for. Then he continues. She has a long-term care policy. And I am the sole beneficiary of her estate when she passes away. So the mom has some protection for long-term care needs, and the son is going to inherit anything when the mom passes away. So here's where it gets interesting, Pete. He's came up with a thought. Remember, folks, the only current income tax deduction he has is his home mortgage. So he writes, I was thinking that it may make sense for me to buy her home from her at a market price of $200,000 with her financing my loan. In other words, the mother will carry the loan to the son. We're assuming it is bought at fair market value, and he's saying that is $200,000. The payments would substitute for my current monthly stipend, thereby allowing her to live in the home, receive as much income as she does now, and I would have the additional tax deduction for the interest, property taxes, etc. When she passes away, my payments would cease and I would own the home free and clear. This just seems like a good way to continue do what I to continue doing what I am currently doing to support her, but add a benefit to me regarding taxes. Am I missing something, or do you have any advice regarding moving forward with this plan? And then he signs it, George. Tennessee volunteer, George, because he's from Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Interesting. I see where he's going with this. I don't quite think it's going to work out the way he thinks, but what are your thoughts, Pete?
We'll go with Pete first.
Okay. Pete's
our guest today.
Yeah, okay.
You got to treat me nice, man. Especially since I'm sick.
Well, you're over there coughing up a lung. Yep. Goodness.
So in this case, it's not a bad plan, especially if the loan is amortized, which means that his payments to mom are going to be mostly interest in the early years. Mm-hmm. He gets it, his income tax basis on the house at that point is $200,000. If mom dies, which you like, we don't know how long he's talking about the note being for, but if mom dies and during the term of the note, he receives the note as part of his inheritance, and the law calls a doctrine of merger, where the creditor and the debtor become the same person, note goes away. There's no forgiveness mm-hmm. of debt or income to him at that point. So mm-hmm. that's not a bad plan in itself. He gets an income tax deduction. Mom has interest income that she'll be receiving that she could very well have to pay income tax on. Mm-hmm. So he needs to look at that. If she's not paying any tax now because her income is so low, it may not be a problem. But that's one of the issues. And then when he sells the house later on after mom's passed, any difference between the fair market value then and the $200,000 basis he has is going to be taxable gain to him, presumably long term at that point. So really the question is, how long is mom going to live? At 80, if she were to live, and I'm just going to pick 20 years, what's the appreciation in the house from the year he bought it, 2017, to the year of mom's death, from the $200,000, because it's basis. So when he sells the house following her death, if he chooses to do that, he's going to have recognizable taxable gain of anything over the $200,000. Mm-hmm. Whereas if mom had kept the house and passed it to him at her death, his income tax basis would be the fair market value at that point, and there would be no taxable gain on the sale of the house. So it's a matter of how long mom will live, and are the income tax deductions that he's getting, less what mom may have to pay in income tax, going to be enough to warrant the risk of having to pay tax on the gain 20 years from now?
But see, I was approaching this from a different standpoint. This is not a true second home. He is either a...
He is, but he's giving free rent to his mom.
He can't give free rent. He's got to declare that. He cannot do that.
Well, we're not talking about a substantial amount of money.
But Chris, to deduct the interest on a second home that you rent more than 14 days of the year, and in this case it would be because the mom is living there, you are restricted on what you can deduct. And it's going to start coming into that problem.
I don't know. Letting a family member live there, I'm not sure constitutes rent.
It has to, Pete. You can't let someone live there, even if it's a family member. You have to, even if you waive the rent, mm-hmm. he has to declare that rent as income.
He should, but I will tell you that most people don't.
Yeah.
It's most people don't, but we need to answer that correctly on here.
Yeah, you're right.
He is supposed to declare, even if he waives the rent, because remember, he is paying her. He's going to stop paying her, technically, the money that he's giving her, and instead give it to her as interest. Now, she has to declare that as income. Mm-hmm. He has to keep that in mind. When he gives her money every month, she doesn't have to declare it as income.
Right.
When he starts paying her, the mom now has to declare that as income. So just let your mom know she's going to have to pay income taxes on the interest that she is now earning when you pay her. But his deductibility is going to be called into question. Even if he is waiving and saying, I'm not really charging my mom rent, this is not a true second home. It's now a rental in the eyes of the IRS if he gets audited.
Well, it would never rise to a second home because she lives there, not him.
Mm-hmm. True.
So it's a
right.
It's
so
a
he's renting it. It's a second home that he's renting.
So it's going to have to fall under the rules of a rental.
Yeah,
exactly.
So it'd be imputed rent income is what Jim's talking about. Mm-hmm. He may not charge his mom, but you know, if in the letter of the law, Jim's absolutely right that he has to impute that income, report it, and then pay taxes on it.
This seems like a complicated approach to maybe trying to get something to happen. What about
what I was going to ask is a trust. Isn't there some sort of trust you can do the same thing with?
Well, sure, you can plug a trust in here, but what's the purpose of having it?
I don't know. I thought you guys had some sort of trust thing for real estate.
Well, you're not talking about a qualified personal residence trust.
That's one, yeah. Well, can that work here?
The benefit of that is when they have a taxable estate because it gets it out of their estate.
Okay, so that wouldn't apply here.
No. Uh-uh.
So what I just want to tell this listener, and this is what started jumping out at me at it, your mom's going to have to declare as income all the interest she's earning. And remember, at the beginning of an amortized schedule, most of those payments are interest. So she's going to have to now what was being given to her as a gift is now going to be taxable income to her. Even though you, listener, yourself are not going to be charging your mom rent, you have to impute what rent would be for that home and declare that as income, even though you never got it from your mom. You've got to do that. Now, whether you do or not is going to be up to you. I'm just telling you, you got to do it. Because if someone lives in that home for more than 14 days, and I believe your mom will be living in there every day, that's now a rental, and you have to impute that income, even though you're not collecting it. Those two issues, Chris, Pete, or Chris, would, in my opinion, perhaps negate everything he's trying to do.
Yeah, and then there's the whole possible capital gains issue he's going to be giving
right.
up.
Right, and then the capital gains step up, you're going to lose.
So what? I'll post something, you can think about it through the break, and you can either then come back and completely dismiss it as crazy. What would it take for his mom to become a dependent of his?
He would have to be providing more than 50%.
Right, so
support.
As long as he's giving her more than over at least a dollar more than Social Security is giving her, couldn't then she qualify as a dependent, and then he would reap some tax benefits from that?
I would think so, but
I need to
take a closer look at it.
Okay. So that music means we're at another break, and when we come back from this break, we're going to hear the number one song from back in 1977, and it's a popular theme song from a popular movie. So we'll find out what that is after this short break here on the Retirement and IRA Show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Thanks for coming back to us here at the Retirement and IRA Show. That is the number one song this week back in 1977. Was the number one song last week as well. That's the ever-popular Barbara Streisand singing the theme song to A Star is Born, otherwise known as Evergreen.
Name of the movie was Evergreen?
No, the song is Evergreen. The movie was Star is Born.
Evergreen.
Evergreen was the theme song to the movie. I believe, though, Tina might think they're two separate songs because last week she had Evergreen on here and this week she says it is A Star is Born with no mention of Evergreen. And usually she doesn't have us play the same song twice in a row anymore. So
she misunderstood.
I don't know that. I'm not going to say that for sure. It's possible because there's no mention of Evergreen on here and we did definitely do it last week.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Should we fire her?
No, because I don't want to have to put these things together.
Just kidding, Tina. If you're listening, you are wonderful.
Whoa, what? The first version of this song was done in 1937?
Really?
No. The first version of the film. That's got to be the movie.
The movie.
So not the song, the movie. There was a version in 37, then another movie version in 1954 with Judy Garland and James Mason, which is a remake, stayed pretty close, and then Barbara Streisand and who?
Who what?
Who's co-starred with Barbara in A Star is Born in 1977.
No
when
idea.
When you were 13 years old.
I have no idea.
Kris Kristofferson. You don't remember that?
No, I don't.
Oh. Okay. What? Rumored to appear in 2018, next year, a third remake starring Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. What?
Okay.
I'm not gonna rely on that one for sure. I don't know.
Anyways,
not
folks,
that I doubt Tina, but
that was a top song from
the top song.
The top song, not a top song.
This
the
week.
Number one song this week 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we do this all tying into Social Security. We began with a song from 1935 last segment because that's the year Social Security was created. Now we look back 40 years, Pete. Not
Chris.
Pete left, you're Chris. Mm-hmm. Now we look back 40 years ago, Chris. because when Social Security first came out, the calculation was based on a number they called 40 elapsed years. Mm-hmm. And in the next segment, which is the final segment of the Retirement and IRA Show until we add a third hour, that next segment, we will look at a song from 35 years ago, because Social Security today is based on a calculation called 35 computation years. We do all of this as a lead-in to What's New on Help with MySocialSecurity.com, a blog that Chris and I maintain. We want to get back rather quickly. Pete had to leave. If you couldn't tell, Pete was coughing up a lung and half dead, which means I am probably going to catch a cold now, which I'm not very excited about. I can almost feel
it. Well, if you go speak into the microphone on the other side of the room where he was, I'm sure you will.
No, because I'm sure that microphone
is completely contaminated.
I'm going to have to spray it with Lysol later. But I just can feel the sickness. I already feel it in my throat.
You
I
can
just know
feel the sickness.
I can feel the sickness just coming into me. I want my listeners to know I'm falling on a sword for you recording this show today with two sick people. That's the dedication I have.
What about the dedication of the two of us who were still sick and yet came into the show and didn't leave you to do it by yourself?
I think you guys plotted this. You both breathed on each other, got each other sick.
Might be a way for us to get out of having to do in a show next week.
Yeah, let's get Jim sick.
When you're nice and sick.
We'll both get sick and get Jim sick.
Apparently things incubate in your body very quickly, though, if you're feeling it already.
I could just feel it. Okay. It's just I know it's coming. Okay, so I want to jump back to that question that Pete was trying to answer because listener, and I'm not going to reread the question if people are just joining now, especially those listening live in Northern Colorado. Wait till it comes out on iTunes, which should be in another few days, and listen to the question. But I, Chris, don't think it's going to work for the reasons we were talking off mic, and I want to make sure our listener knows this. We couldn't get Justin in the room today to talk about some of the tax issues, but he's not going to quite be able to.
It's not as clean as what he's describing. It's a far more complicated with potentially giving up a lot of tax benefits accidentally down the road.
When his mom passes
away.
Right,
so it's probably not. I see what he's trying to do, get another tax deduction for himself. I'm not sure that's going to help a whole lot. There is.
I'd rather inherit the house tax-free with a step-up in basis.
Right. So, you know, give up the tax deduction now for the X amount you're giving her every month. Maybe pursue her becoming a dependent of yours by giving her more than what she's getting from Social Security, because once you start paying more than 50% of her living expenses, essentially she depends on you for more than half, she becomes a dependent again, as if she were similar to if she were a child, and there can be some tax benefits
but
a tax person would be the one to
you need a tax person is what we're getting at, because you also have to recognize, even though this is a second home and you are allowed to deduct up to $1.1 million on a first and second home interest, you are limited on that second home if it is a rental. And clearly it's a rental because your mom is living in it. And if you rent it for more or less than 14 days, the rules are different. You'd be renting it for more than 14 days. Your mom lives in it permanently. So you would have to impute, as I said before, rental income, which more than could easily offset, Chris, any type of interest deduction he may get. Right. So he may end up losing on this. But not only that, listener, I'm going to guess you earn more than $100,000. So if you do, and you rent the home for more than 14 days, which you do, being able to deduct any losses greater than any income, which is one of the benefits of owning real estate, if you earn less than $100,000, losses beyond your income are deductible up to $25,000 of passive losses against active gain, which would be wonderful for you. You're not going to be able to do it because you earn more than $100,000. So you need to look at a lot of these issues. I don't think it's going to work, and I would be very hesitant. And then, as Pete said, you're going to lose the step up in basis at that point. So I don't like the idea. I think you're thinking real short term, but you really need to consult with a tax expert. And unfortunately, Justin isn't here today, so he can't opine on any of this. But chat to a tax person, because they'll explain a lot about what my hesitations are in telling you to go ahead and do this.
Right.
I don't like the idea. I would give that a eh, but I don't like it.
I agree.
Okay.
Look for something simpler.
Exactly. Okay, so let's get into another question here, my stack of stuff. Oh, this one you answered already to him, but I will read the question. I will give you his your answer to him and let you answer the answer to him to our listeners.
That's a lot of answering.
It is, because it's three questions he asks. This is all tying into Social Security and Roths and things like that for a U.S. citizen working in China. Okay, so it begins. And I'm not going to use his real name. He uses his real name here. We will call him, like we always do to protect the privacy of our listeners, George.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
So he begins, I am George, an American who has been living overseas in China for 9 years. I have several questions about retirement. I'm 32 and have worked and studied in China, but I have had a few years, and he put in parentheses, 5, where I was able to contribute to my Roth IRA because I earned income in the U.S. And he put in parentheses, I was an adjunct professor at a U.S. university. He says, I have several questions I was hoping you could answer. Number one, if my earned income taxable on Form W-2 is $2,900. Does that mean I can only contribute $2,900 for that tax year? What he's asking there, folks, is remember the IRS limits. He's 32 years old. So the most he can put into a Roth IRA is $5,500. He's asking, if I only earn $2,900, does that mean I can only put in $2,900? Or can he contribute the full amount? I'll have Chris answer that in a minute.
You don't just knock that one out? It's so simple.
Okay, well, what's the answer?
He can only put in the $2,900.
Exactly.
Because the limit is $5,500 or earned income, whichever is less. So his earned income being $2,900, that's his limit. And the $5,500 isn't just for the Roth. That's for all IRAs for that taxpayer for the year. That's the $5,500 limit. He can split it however he wants, but the max is $5,500. But in his case, $2,900, since that's all he earned.
Okay. Then question two, is there any way to claim foreign taxed income as U.S. earned income so I can max out my Roth contribution every year? So question two, I think he kind of assumed what we were going to say about question one. Mm-hmm. So he's saying, look, okay, I get it. U.S. taxable income was only $2,900. Can I take some of my foreign taxed income? Remember, folks, he's living and working in China for a Chinese university. Can he take some of the income that was taxed in China and switch it and make it taxed in the U.S. so he can put more money in a Roth? Before you jump to that, let me get to the third question. Mm-hmm. So Chris is going to answer that second question. Intriguing thought he had, but we'll let Chris address that. And number three, I recently started consulting for an American company, and I need to file a 1099. I know I am going to need to pay taxes on that income, but it isn't considered, quote unquote, earned, but self-employment. Is that correct? Can I count that income towards my Roth contribution as well? So he's trying to get more money in his Roth, and he's wondering. He only has $2,900 of W-2 income for working as an adjunct professor for a university in the U.S. So he's wondering, could he take some of his income that he paid Chinese taxes on and somehow get it to count as U.S. income and use it to contribute for a Roth? And if that doesn't work, he started his own little side business, it seems, and he started a consulting firm, and he's consulting for an American company that gave him a 1099. In other words, the American company said to him, you are self-employed. It's up to you to pay taxes on this. It's up to you to pay Medicare on this and Social Security on this. We hired you as an independent contractor. He's wondering, Chris, can self-employment money go into his Roth? So you wanted to see what you had written, and that's what you had put in there. So why don't you address those? You already addressed the first. Address the next two for him.
So there's, when you earn money in a foreign country, there's actually a couple different ways it's handled, and it depends on the tax treaty status between the countries. There's some interconnection between the tax situations in foreign countries and in the United States when you are a U.S. citizen. Basically, there is a foreign earned income exclusion provision where you can just pretend like that income you didn't earn. You earn it in the other country and you're subject to the taxes in that country, but there's no U.S. taxes. You exclude it from reporting to the U.S. And that's what most people use because it's a little over $90,000 a year, and then there's no U.S. taxes owed on any of that money. That's what most people use. There's also separately, by the way, if you use that, you cannot take that income and count it as earned income for a Roth contribution. So since most people use that provision when they're working in the foreign country, that essentially makes it so they can't contribute to a Roth. Instead, there's a foreign tax credit situation, which can apply separately, but then you expose yourself to taxes in both countries, but then you get a credit on your U.S. tax bill for the taxes that you paid to the foreign country. So essentially then you are recognizing income as U.S. taxable income, and then you would be able to count that. So it depends on what method he's using, because for most people it's beneficial to just leave it outside the U.S. tax system completely. They use the exclusion and they don't try to overlap it and then claim a credit against their U.S. tax liability, etc. I know this is kind of complicated, but it boils down to how you're going to treat that foreign earned income. And if it's how most people treat it, using the exclusion, no, you cannot count that for purposes of Roth contribution qualification.
But you have better news on the third part of his question. The money that he got as a independent contractor for an American company given an American 1099 has better news.
Right. So as a self-employed person, you can...
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit.
Believe it or not, this piece of paper...
That little piece of paper hit that?
Pressed this little button on my keyboard hard enough to cause that to go off. That was weird. Anyway, as a self-employed person, you do have income, and they consider it earned income, but it's not the full 1099 piece, because they consider one of the benefits to receiving 1099 income is you're considered self-employed, so you can recognize certain expenses having to do with your business to offset some of that income so you don't pay tax on the full amount. That's the good news. The bad news is the full gross 1099 proceeds he received aren't considered the income for the Roth or IRA contribution limits. It's the net after he takes out his business expenses. So yes, the self-employment income will count for purposes of a contribution limit, but it's going to be the net amount after you have included all of your business expenses, not the gross amount of the 1099 that the consulting company or the company that hired him as a consultant is paying him on the 1099.
Right. And just so you know, listener, I used to file that way years, long mm-hmm. time ago. Mm-hmm. Now I pay myself a salary. Mm-hmm. But when I first started, there was no salary to pay me. I didn't have any money. So it was all 1099 income. I was self-employed. And I could take the net amount if there was any, and there was some years there weren't, but if there was a net amount, I was allowed to contribute that. But exactly. So not
some,
the
gross some good
amount.
News, and yeah.
between the two
the
of those
bit that he has, and if he can have at least another $2,600 of consulting net income after his business expenses, he might be able to max out his Roth contribution of $5,500 in 2017.
Exactly. Okay, so hopefully that answered his question, and we'll move on. Do we have time for another question, or
yes,
is it time
we
for
do.
A break?
No, we have 8 minutes.
Wow, geez, that's like an eternity.
I
here.
Know.
We just went through...
Time for half another question, probably, at your rate.
This one we've actually addressed before, but it's a new listener. Mm-hmm. She calls herself Georgette. It's a new listener. I don't know where Georgette is from. She didn't say. Georgette, as we answer this email, if you could get back a hold of us and let us know where you're from, especially if you are from Maine, New Hampshire, Delaware, or Rhode Island, Chris would be very appreciative of that.
From her email, maybe we can tell from her accent that she's from Maine.
Yeah, you can't read it in here. She begins, I can't get there from here. That's my Maine approach. That's my Maine attempt.
That's a Maine accent?
You can't get there from here. Yeah, Maine is what? Like that. Yeah, what are you looking at me for like that? That's a maniac.
That sounds like somebody from Cape Cod or something.
No, no, that's Maine for sure. That's my Maine impression. Okay,
you can't get there from here?
Yeah, there you go. That was perfect. You could sound like you're from Maine.
Okay, I've never been there, so I have no idea what they sound like.
Oh, yeah, they sound like that.
I figured moose calls and lobsters.
No, lobsters don't make a sound. Okay, so we have talked about this in the past, but a long time ago. She is a new listener, mm-hmm. so she obviously didn't hear those. So we're going to get this because it's a pretty interesting question. Not yeah. interesting, but apply to a lot of people.
We have new listeners all the time.
Right. She's been listening long enough that she called herself Georgette, even though her real name is also in the email, and it's not Georgette. But we will protect her privacy and keep it as Georgette. Mm-hmm. Okay, it begins. Jim, hi. I came across your podcast by chance a few months ago and now listen every week. Thanks for all your great advice. I don't know if this topic has been covered in the past. We already said it has, but that's okay. But what are the rules for starting a Roth IRA for a child? Mm. She goes on and says, I have heard this can be done, but the child has to be earning money, right? I currently have a 2, 4, and 7-year-old. I think she's competing against you and Justin for most kids.
3 isn't really competition for me.
Well, no, but she's tied with Justin, and because he has a 1, 3, and 5, I think. Mm-hmm. She has a 2, 4, and 7. You've mm-hmm. got 6, so you've got them beat. You got twice the amount.
I do. Okay. And twice is a lot more.
So I currently have a 2, 4, and 7-year-old. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing they won't be able to contribute until they have their first real job, right? Thanks again for all you do, Georgette. Mm-hmm. So, Georgette, you are correct. Anybody can contribute to a Roth IRA. There is no age limit. There is an income limit. And this is key because you are not allowed to put money into a traditional IRA after the age of 70 and a half. No such limit appears for a Roth. There's no young limit and there's no old limit. There is an income limit. Now, we've talked about this in the past, Chris, because I've pointed out to listeners, diaper models. Mm-hmm. These preteen babies, not preteen, preteen, what are they? Prenatal?
Infants.
What are they called? I don't know.
Infants.
There's no pre-something?
Pre-toddler, but that's not a...
Pre-toddler,
that's not
okay.
something... you just call them what they are, an infant or
infant,
baby.
A baby. All right. Mm-hmm. I don't have kids. I don't know the lingo.
That's okay.
So these infants who are in baby commercials and diaper commercials, they're drawing a salary.
Probably 1099 income.
Independent contractors, mm-hmm. kid works when they want. Yeah. Don't take me out of the crib. I'm not working today.
You know, just call when needed.
But these baby models for diapers, listener, they are paid, mm-hmm. and their parents have the right to put some of that money into a Roth IRA form because the baby has earned income.
And the key, though, while there is the income limit for the child, the tax ID number has to be reporting income. The money that goes in doesn't have to be the baby's. No. Doesn't have to be the child's. Now, he's being kind of excessive in his description of a baby model, but your seven-year-old, in just a few years, if they start mowing lawns or something like that, as long as you take the steps of reporting that income on a tax return to the IRS, you can then contribute into either the child themselves or you on the child's behalf can contribute into an IRA under their tax number up to the earnings limit or $5,500, whichever is less.
Correct. And you, the child cannot open the IRA. The child is a minor. They cannot open into a legally binding contract. So you as the parent will open a custodial IRA. It's just a different type of IRA. All custodians, the companies holding the IRAs, will have different rules on who's allowed to open a custodial IRA, how it'll work. So you'll have to consult with the custodian. A custodian and a custodial are two different terms and people, but they just sound the same. The custodian will be the company that's holding the IRA and establishing it. You are opening a custodial IRA, meaning you are opening on behalf of someone else. So a child cannot open, especially like the two-year-old that she has, can't crawl down to the local custodian and say, gaga gugu, and open up an IRA. Don't work that way. So the parent would open up the IRA as a custodial Roth IRA. And what Chris is getting at is you don't actually have to put the kids' earnings in there. If you want to use your own money, you can. But the child must have the earnings attributable to them, and you would only be able to put in up to their earnings or $5,500, whatever is lower. So there are no age restrictions, listeners, for opening a Roth IRA. Excuse me. There are no age restrictions. There are income limits. But the child needs to be earning income. And right now, without your children earning income, it's hard to do.
Well, maybe they are. Maybe they are.
They could be the baby models, but the way she's talking, they don't. Now, the seven-year-old, maybe in another 4, 5, 6, 7 years, they may be out babysitting or delivering newspapers, if they still do that anymore, and have a little bit of earnings, and you can assist them with it. But anyone can open up a Roth IRA of any age. You just need the earned income. And unfortunately, her kids right now don't have that.
Okay, so that music means we are headed into our last break. We have picked up the pace in covering these emails, so that's giving me some optimism. We will get through quite a few of them. When we get back from this next break, we're going to hear the number one song from this week in 1982, which is 35 years ago. This week's number one hit has been in the spot for 6 weeks. We haven't been playing it, though, because it happens so often. We've been playing a mixture of other top 10 hits. But the band that created and performed this hit was originally formed under the name Snoopy and the Sopworth Camels.
Huh?
Yeah, I thought I'd get you with that one. So this is a great hint.
That was their name.
That was their original name, Snoopy and the Sopworth Camels. We'll find out who that is and what song it is when we come back here on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Well, welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is the number one song from 35 years ago this week. Very recognizable, of course, the Jay Giles Band singing Centerfold. And yes, Jim, it is true, their original name was Snoopy and the Sopworth Camels.
I think Jay Giles is better.
A little better.
Now, how can we keep playing that song?
We only did it a couple times. We played other songs.
Okay.
We played it the first week and then this time.
Well, I didn't know if they're doing it because they're a Boston band.
No, it was 6 weeks, so we played it week one, and then we played other top 10, and then we played it here, because this is the last week, I'm pretty sure. And then, by the way, their original name didn't last very long. They very quickly changed their name to the Jay Giles Band. They were offered a slot to play at Woodstock. They've been around for a while. Jay Giles, the Jay Giles we know is the later Jay Giles. But they turned it down because, quote, who wants to hang out in the mud for 3 days?
So whoever made that decision for them wasn't the bright
one.
They
still ended up pretty popular. So Centerfold's their biggest hit and is number 52 on Billboard's all-time top songs. So even without being in the mud for 3 days, they became pretty darn
successful.
There's other songs.
Oh, no, there's other songs, but that was their biggest hit.
That, I think, is their biggest hit, yeah.
Yep.
It is. Centerfold was their biggest hit. Yeah, it says right here.
Yeah.
I just said that.
I know. I'm repeating it.
Very nice.
Okay.
I'm glad you
agree. So why are we doing this?
To waste time between...
True. And we do it wonderfully. Mm-hmm. But we do it as a lead-in to what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. And I explained in the previous segment how all three songs somehow tie into Social Security. First song was from 1935, the year Social Security was created. Second song was from 40 years ago. And that's because Social Security first used a number called 40 elapsed years in the calculation for Social Security. This song was from 35 years ago because today Social Security uses a calculation called 35 computation years as they figure out your Social Security benefits. So that's why we use these three songs. It all ties into what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa.
So what is new, Chris?
So this week on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, I have to apologize. It's a rerun. Because a few days ago, when I would have recorded a brand new one,
you were sick.
I couldn't speak at all. Today, I just have a nice, a little deeper,
baritone,
raspier
voice.
Radio voice.
You sound like Kim Carnes, a male Kim Carnes.
That's very offensive to me. Very, very offensive. Not that there's anything wrong with Kim Carnes personally. I just don't like
the
sound of her voice at all.
And Betty Davis Eyes, which was number one for about 58 weeks, drove you crazy.
Exactly. So essentially, we're rerunning something I talked about quite a while ago, but it's kind of somewhat trivial but of interest, and that is, what is in your Social Security number? What do the numbers in the number tell you? And there actually was some, they've moved now to pretty much random numbers. But at one time, from your Social Security number, there was information about where you were born, where you got your Social Security number, these types of things that were in there. And just kind of a little interesting. So that's what's new and old and new again on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
Interesting.
What's new, pussycat?
Okay.
But if the voice holds up, I'll have a brand new one for next week.
Excellent. So this question will be question five. We're flying through these.
We are. We're picking up steam.
We are picking up steam. And this one is a relatively recent email. I had to reach out to this person and get some clarification, and she provided good clarification. Mm-hmm. Also, she names names, and we're not going to name names. Mm-hmm. She references a custodian.
But she names names?
She names the custodian by name.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
And I will change the names to protect the innocent.
Well, they may not be innocent, but we're going to change their names anyway.
the advice she received screwed her over. But I'm not going to name the custodian. Mostly not because I'm trying to protect them. The regulators won't let me do that. We've talked about this before. You and I are... actual practicing financial planners. I myself am a
not only do I own a registered investment advisory firm, which is how I do my financial planning, but I also work with a larger registered investment advisor firm, and I am also what is known in the industry, Chris, as a registered representative. That's going back a long time ago. My business model was under that. I don't do that anymore. I don't work under that registration anymore. All my planning is done by charging fees, but years ago, that's not how the industry was, and I've never given up that registration, mostly because I have certain clients that have been with me for over 12 years, and we still have some of their old accounts, and I want to be able to continue working with them. So I've never given up my registered representative designation, which means I am also regulated not only by the state of Colorado as a state registered RIA and the SEC for my work with a nationally registered RIA. I still have my registered rep designation, so I'm regulated by the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority as well. You can see I'm regulated till the cows come home.
Yes.
FINRA has an issue if their registered reps name names and call out member firms and accuse them of giving bad advice. So I'm kind of being muffled by the regulators.
Censored.
I like that better than muffled. Yeah. So I'm being censored because other than that, I'd name this company in a heartbeat. But this is a national firm.
If we named it, everyone would know it.
Oh, Lord, yes.
Big one.
So
advertises on television all the time.
All the time. Okay, so we will begin with, where's page one?
Oh, my gosh, multiple pages?
Yeah, because I asked her questions and then she wrote back. And, you know, I print everything.
Yes, I see that.
And you see how my iPad is being used. It works as a wonderful easel. You've got to get a picture of this. Because I don't think people believe I'm using an iPad as an easel to hold printed emails that come as an electronic form.
I'm pretty sure anybody who's listened to the show for a while believes it.
Good. Okay, it begins. Jim, it's a wonderful way to begin an email.
Greetings from Maine.
She never tells me where she's from.
It's got to be Maine or Baltimore. Or,
there's
sorry,
another
or
one.
Delaware.
So this is a woman. We'll call her Georgette. She gives me her real name, but she knows who she is. Write back to me and let me know where you're from, especially if you're from a state we don't have a star on yet.
Maine, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Delaware.
Okay, that's what Chris is looking for. But anyways, oh, wait a minute. I apologize. She did tell me where she's from in the email because she's moving. She's moving from...
If she's moving to any of those states, I'll count it.
Ah, she's in Texas and she's moving to Missouri.
Oh, both covered.
We have both covered.
That's okay.
Or okay. Pete would say, is he a Missouri or a Missouri?
He's a Missouri.
He's a Missouri. Mm-hmm. Okay. So she does tell us where she lives. I apologize. Okay. Anyway, she begins, Jim.
Lone Star George is going to be very upset now because you're putting another Texan
ahead of him.
Ahead of him.
Oh, goodness.
Well, you definitely need to answer his question this week.
Well, I'm going to be sick next week because you and Pete got me sick.
Well, he'll give you time at home then to type out his answer.
Okay. It begins, Jim.
Yes.
I've been listening to your podcast for a few months now. I appreciate how detailed you are in your responses to listeners' questions.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see how she wrote that? I just want to point that out to you.
Some people like hearing the same thing over and over three times.
I don't say the same thing over and over, but I try to answer a detailed question detailedly.
In a detailed manner?
In a detailed manner. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. I listened intently to the podcast from January 14th in hopes you would cover my issue, but alas, I didn't find my answer.
Did she use the word alas?
Yes.
I love this. Go ahead.
But alas, I didn't find my answer, so I'll ask my question and hope you can address it. I am 33 years old. I left my employer B, in Texas, and have started a job with employer C in Missouri.
What happened to employer A?
She just totally blew by employer A.
Okay, so employer B.
She gets to employer A with how the...
Oh, so there was a leftover
401k. Yes. Yeah. Now you see where this is going.
I see, totally.
So
see
we can see
going.
How this national...
Okay, so employer B is the right place to start.
Correct.
She left B, heading to employer C in Missouri.
Correct. Okay. In employer B's 401k plan, I had a mixture of pre-tax 401k contributions, post-tax 401k contributions and Roth 401k contributions. So this is telling me she's been with employer B for a while before they had a Roth option.
Well, technically, the Roth 401k contributions aren't in the same account as the other two.
We've talked about that.
But so when she says they're all three mixed together, technically they aren't. The first two are in one. Then the Roth 401k contributions are in under the same overall plan offerings, but are
accounted for separately. And that confuses people because they get one statement, they see one 401k, and they see three contributions. They look like they're one, and for all intent and purposes, listener, they're one in your eyes, but in the eyes of the custodian handling the 401k, you have three separate pools of money. Okay, so again, she has pre-tax 401k, post-tax 401k, and Roth 401k at Employer B in Texas.
Got it.
And again, people might be saying, well, how does she have post-tax money in a 401k when she could have put it in a Roth 401k? I'm going to guess, I'm going to go out on a limb here, they probably didn't have the 401k option when she was putting in post-tax money.
Or when she rolled over from the old 401k into this one, into the new companies, it was already a mixture.
It could be one of those two. Mm-hmm. So I shall continue reading. Mm-hmm. Where was I?
Well, use your finger. You do have a piece of paper there.
Oh, goodness. I lost
track
my
of your spot. And we're still on page one.
That's a big question. Jesse. Texas, there's a... Okay, I found my spot. Let me back up a little since I've confused everyone. So she's asking, I hope you can address my question. I'm 33 years old. I recently left my employer, Employer B in Texas, and have started a job with Employer C in Missouri. Inside Employer B's 401k plan, I had a balance including pre-tax 401k, post-tax 401k, and Roth 401k. Mm-hmm. Okay, I shall begin from there. I rolled over my pre-tax and my Roth balances to Employer C's plan.
Got it.
Employer C is her new employer. Employer C did not accept the after-tax contributions, so I could not roll those over.
Got it.
I now have a check in my hands. I don't know if she was literally holding the check as she wrote this, but she said, I now have a check in my hands made out to, and we're going to have to just XYZ custodian. I don't want to name the company. Made out to, we shall call them the company that screwed me over.
That's a lot of words. Company X.
Company X. Okay, I now have a check in my hands made out to Company X, custodian of my Roth IRA. She has a Roth IRA with this company. I am ready to roll it into my Roth IRA I have with Company X. But I think I heard you say on a podcast, I can roll my after-tax traditional 401k into a Roth, and that transaction is called a conversion. But what if you already have an IRA with money in it? So let me explain, and she goes on and writes a few things. I'll explain what she's saying here. Company C, her new employer, would only accept the pre-tax 401k and the Roth 401k,
right,
which makes perfect sense. We've talked about this on the past. A 401k cannot accept post-tax 401k contributions. They can accept a Roth 401k contribution, and they can accept a pre-tax 401k contributions. Just like if she had an IRA, and we talked about this on a previous show, you could take an IRA with pre- and post-tax contributions in it and move it to a 401k. But the post-tax IRA contributions, what we call basis or cream, cannot be moved. Well, that applies from a 401k as well. So what she had was an old 401k with pre-tax and post-tax money and a Roth 401k. Her new employer said, hey, we'll take the Roth, we'll take the pre, but you got to keep that post-tax money there. Well, what happened is after she moved it, there was $20,000. I know all this because I ended up having to write back to her. So there was $20,000 left in her old 401k.
Mm-hmm. And
all post-tax.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, that 401k cut her a check for that.
Right.
Now, that 401k did one thing good. Actually, they did a few things good. They made it out to her Roth IRA. So we're calling that company Company X. So they made the check out to Company X. But she shared with me that years ago, and she wrote, I left employer A. You were wondering where A was because she started with B and C. Years ago, she worked for another company, folks, and she amassed $125,000 pre-tax in a 401k.
Okay.
She got on the phone and called an 800 number and started working with an advisor from Company X. This is the national firm that I will not name. The advisor from this national firm advised her, rather than moving that 401k to her new 401k, which would be Company B, mm-hmm. put it in an IRA with them.
Okay.
Not only did he say move it to an IRA with me, he then realized, or maybe he realized earlier, she made too much money to contribute to a Roth IRA.
Mm-hmm.
So he said to her, we'll do a backdoor contribution to a Roth IRA. So he had her move $125,000 from a 401k into an IRA. And then he had her take $5,000. This is going back a few years ago where the contribution was $5,000 for people under 50. He said, put $5,000 into this IRA with me, and then we're going to convert it as a backdoor conversion. And you're looking like he's making a mistake. The look on your face is
classic.
That's
not a backdoor conversion.
Contribution, rather.
No, that's not a backdoor anything, what he's doing there.
No, the guy's a fool.
Yeah.
So she writes, she goes on, so I took $5,000 from my paycheck, contributed it to my IRA. Remember, folks, she just opened this IRA at Company X that I will not name, mm-hmm. per the advice of her telephone mm-hmm. advisor. And then he tells her, take $5,000, put it in the IRA, and then I, meaning him, I'm going to convert that $5,000.
Mm-hmm. Yep, as a backdoor.
As a backdoor into mm-hmm. Roth, because she earned too much money yep. to put it in directly.
Mm-hmm.
So you could see where this is going.
Yes,
he screwed her over. So she then says, I took $5,000 from my paycheck, contributed it to my IRA. He, meaning her broker, then took the $5,000 out and put it into a Roth IRA.
Mm-hmm.
And then she writes, it wasn't until a few years later.
Yeah, when the IRS sends her a letter.
No, the IRS didn't send her a letter.
Oh, really?
But she says, it wasn't until a few years later I realized I actually had to pay taxes on that $5,000 conversion again. Because my balance of pre-tax and mm-hmm. post-tax IRA basis.
Now, the good news is the reason why she didn't get a letter from the IRS is because she did pay the taxes properly.
Yeah, she did pay the
on
taxes
the conversion,
properly.
But the whole point of a backdoor contribution is that you're supposed to be able to get it in there paying tax on it once and then going in. Now, she's not technically paying tax twice. She's just not getting the benefits. She's making a contribution and being taxed on it because it's ultimately going to the Roth, and she's not getting the, well, I'm talking in circles now, aren't I?
Yeah, I'll walk people through that. I know where you're going with that.
So you're not getting the immediate tax benefits of doing it.
You are correct. She's not losing out. She's not getting it all at
first. She's just paying a lot more taxes.
But I have a way to fix this for her.
Yeah, there's
always... No, there's a way to fix this. I'll explain it to her. So she writes, it wasn't until a few years later I realized, I got 4 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this ain't going to happen. It wasn't until a few years later I realized I actually pay taxes on that $5,000 again.
Right, exactly.
Okay, back to my original question, Jim. She's now holding this post-tax, and she's worried. Mm-hmm. If I take my post-tax 401k check, and put it into my Roth IRA, will I end up being taxed on that money again because I have a large IRA in my name? Let me explain what happened and where her broker screwed this up. The woman earns too much money to contribute money directly to a Roth IRA. So she was going to try what is known as a backdoor contribution. And it's done only if you do not have a large IRA or any IRA. If you don't have an IRA, this works brilliantly. What her broker or advisor from Company X should have said was leave that 401k there or move it to your new 401k. Don't give it to me. He didn't say that. He wanted that money. Mm-hmm. He wanted to manage that money and make a fee off of her.
Yep.
So he had her move it to an IRA with him or with his company. And then he says, oh, you earn too much money to contribute to a Roth. Let's do a backdoor. Well, the fool doesn't know what the hell he's doing. So when she took this $5,000 and put it in the IRA, she can't deduct that $5,000. So it's basis. And then he just converted $5,000, but her tax preparer knew the rules, and she had to pay taxes on that money. Even though she didn't get to deduct the $5,000 going in, it was after-tax money, she had to pay taxes on nearly all of the conversion again.
Mm-hmm. And that tax, the money that she'd put in that she did pay tax on is still sitting mostly in that
original
IRA. So
I want to get to what I want her to do. So here's the thing. First of all, stop working with that guy from the 800 number and get a real financial planner, someone you can call directly and you're not calling an 800 number. Second of all, he gave you bad advice. What you need to do with that check, first of all, you're okay. Even though the check is written, well, the check is written out to your Roth IRA. Even though you have an existing IRA, the monies are not being mixed.
Right.
So that $20,000 check you have, listener, put it into the Roth. It will be a 100% tax-free conversion because you legally moved that huge 401k into your new employer. You cannot move the after-tax money. That has to sit there. So that's perfect. Now here's what you do. You take that IRA where you have $5,000 of after-tax money and $125,000 of pre-tax, and you move it to your new 401k. By law, you cannot move that $5,000 of after-tax money. So that will remain. You then take that $5,000 of after-tax money and put it into your Roth IRA as a tax-free conversion.
Yep.
You now have no more IRAs, and you can start doing the backdoor Roth contribution every single year.
Until they shut the door.
Until they shut the door.
Yep.
That's what you do.
Exactly.
We'll get into this in the next. I'm going to answer this one. I'm going to get into this a little more depth in the next episode because we're ending now. And then we're going to get to Lone Star George next week.
Perfect. So we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.